Thank you. So, welcome to this class. We are going to be talking about history, all right? Let's just go. I haven't started out living American history, and I will immediately say that when I saw this title, my heart kind of flipped a little bit. Yes. Does anybody else?
Both of them?
No, don't hand the one. I'll keep the one.
Which one of
them? This one I will keep, and those.
Okay, who needs the living?
There may be no copies were needed. Okay. Okay, now if I haven't have enough of those, I won't have enough of the others.
Copies, so we
just... Okay.
Else?
Good.
Ladies.
All good.
You got a few extra here.
All right. Thank you. My heart kind of contracted a bit because American history is very controversial, and I have avoided that controversy somewhat by just not talking about it too much. I still get sucked into lots of discussions and debates. But one of my pet peeves about Americans is that it's like the world revolves around America. And it's like there's so much more in history than American history. And we are not the center of this story, all right? The human story, as it were. And so I kind of push that point a little bit. There are so many other perspectives. But having said that, and realizing that most everybody here is American, it is an important part to study your own history and to know something about it and how you study it and the view that you look through as you study it, I think is of critical importance. So I actually, like I said, my heart contracted, but kind of with, I don't know what, but there was a little bit of joy in there too as well. So I'm glad to talk about American history. I will say just a little bit about myself. I am not anti-American. All right. I am actually an American citizen. I am a Canadian citizen as well now since November. But in the 26 years that we've been married, the time of our marriage has been divided between three countries almost equally. So the United States, Canada, and Romania. That has given me a perspective on world history and specifically on American history. But I grew up right in the middle of the United States, so Missouri. Many of you will know that. And I was impacted tremendously by that place where I grew up. And in fact, all of us are impacted, not only where we first began our story, but where we continue our story. And American history, this is the cosmopolitan part of me now speaking, American history and American identity does impact the world. All right, so let's talk about our debate, our definitions here. What do we mean by... I'll start out with my questions that I put in my description. What does it mean to be an American? What does it mean to be a Christian? What does it mean to be an American Christian? What does it mean to be a Christian American? What does it mean to be salt and light within the fascinating combination of opportunity, tragedy, and resilience that is the American story? Those three words are all very important to me. Opportunity, tragedy, resilience. If I would sum up what I think of in American history, I would use those three things. There are tragic parts of American history that we need to look at and actually admit they're tragic. They're wrong. They're evil. All right? People got seriously hurt in this aspect of American history. But there's also a place of resilience, and which is, of course, simply a moving back or a rebalancing. A couple of years ago, I had a talk on Rome and the Roman Empire, and, of course, American identity is consciously fashioned on the Roman Empire and the Roman ideal, and there are some very significant parallels in that, and resilience is one of them. Okay, and, of course, there is also opportunity. So, let's talk about what do we mean by living American history? What do we mean about living? Do any of you have an idea you want to throw out? What comes to your mind? Maybe nothing. Okay, I have way too much to say to pause too long. Okay, not that what I have to say is so important, but it's just kind of burning up here. All right.
Changing.
Sorry.
Changing.
All right. It's changing. It's dynamic. Often the word that's used for something is if it's staying the same, it's static. If it's changing, it's dynamic. So part of all histories and all views of histories, they are always dynamic, all right? Both the interpretations and what's going on are not staying the same, okay? Right, something else. What do we think about with living?
Still happening.
What's going on now, and not only what's going on now, but how do we view what's going on in the past? That's part of the dynamic part, but it's part of what we are right now, current, okay? So it's current dynamism, okay? Something else. Okay, I think of two other things, and that is the one thing that people hate about history is this concept of dates and memorization, and you have this, it is important to get the order of events right, okay? We didn't have the Civil War and then slavery, all right? So you've got to get some things right in order to make sense out of the path of history, and dates help with that. The order is more important than the dates, but the dates help root those things, okay? So when I think about living, I think about stories. And then putting those stories of living, real, breathing, emotional people in a dry historical context in place, and that this is what this opens it up. All right, so story. I think of the word story. Another thing I think of with living is place, where you connect a specific place with a specific story. All right? And I just love that. It's so meaningful for me to go to a place where something happened. All right, and I have had the privilege of traveling more than some, but not as much as I would like, and not as much as some people have. And of course, I'm especially interested in European history, biblical history, and some of those ancient history, but American history. So, the connection of place and artifact. What do I mean by artifact? Something that's still there, that you can feel or even taste or see. Give me some American artifacts. Can you think of any? And it can be natural, too. Something God made. Okay? Can you think of anything?
Close to us, there is actually remnants of the Oregon Trail.
There you go. And also the Whitman Massacre, correct? That's an amazing thing. So there's a museum there. Okay. Something else. Really fast, children.
The Cliff Dwellers.
Good. And the place where they were. All right, the St. Louis Arch. Washington, D.C. is filled with symbolic buildings, intentionally so, and it is massively interesting. The mountains, specific mountains, all of that. Okay, let's keep moving. That's the living. What do we mean by American? American is a real messy word. So what can it mean? It can mean anybody in or from North or South America. It can mean anybody in or from North America, all right? It can mean both of them together, or it can mean separately. But what has it become?
Anyone from the U.S.
There you go. It's become an adjective that has been turned into a noun meaning somebody from the United States of America, and that irritates other Americans. Just point that out. Why do you call yourselves American? I've had that thrown at me more times than you can imagine. And by the way, Americans are kind of known to be arrogant and all that kind of stuff. I've often said that Americans, and I'm talking about United States citizens here, are not so arrogant as they are ignorant, right? They just don't know other stuff that's going on. I've had some real foolish things said to me in the United States of America in connection to other countries and stuff like that. Having said all that, I've often commented that I've had more arrogant comments directed at me as an American and more jeering laughter directed at me as an American than definitely I've witnessed the other way. So I do feel a little bit pinched in this whole thing between the American identity and the non-American identity. But why has American come to mean someone from the United States of America? It's very simple. It's very difficult to come up with an adjective that means someone from the United States of America, all right? A USian? What do you say? And citizen of the United States or citizen of the USA, well, that's a noun. It's not really American. It's not an adjective. So Canadian, Latin American, Mexican, Colombian, Peruvian, lots of stuff. They just blend, all right? But United States of America, that doesn't work, all right? So it has come to mean someone from the United States. And so when we're talking about living American history, we are actually focusing on U.S. history. Okay? Is that clear? And I try to be really humble about that when I'm talking to somebody else who's chiding me for using it in that way. It's just like language change. This is what it's come to mean. I don't necessarily defend it. Come up with a better one. Okay? Figure it out. Make it popular. I'll be glad to use it. Okay, now the more complicated one. What is history? I'm going to set something straight before you say something that I'm going to disagree with. I don't want to embarrass anybody. History is not everything that's happened in the past. All right? That's just everything that's happened in the past. Okay? It's too much for us to nearly comprehend. It's technically not what the word means. The word means a story or a retelling or an inquiry into a story. Like, why are things the way they are now? All right? The inquiry into the past to know why things are happening are currently the way they are. And that is the actual technical meaning of the word. Historia, from the beautiful and wonderful Greek language. All right? And who is called the father of history? This is not in your room. Just throw it out, you know? All right, Herodotus. Herodotus said, I have decided, it has come to my attention, that I should know why these things are happening. It was with the Persian war and what's happening. And so I decided to make an inquiry, there's your history word, into what happened between Persia and Greece. All right, and he wrote, and this is kind of the first real history book. Before that, it was all poetry, all right? It is so worth reading. It is so funny. It is so full of outlandish tales, which in his credit he says, now listen, I have not actually seen this, but I have heard that there are people who live along the Nile River who only have one foot. And so it's fascinating. Read The Persian Wars by Herodotus. That is considered the foundational work of history, specifically Western history. All right, so the other definition of history that I really like, and I got this from Tim Snyder, maybe I'm just going to say it. History is the interpretation of records of continuity and discontinuity within a measurable period of time and space. All right, you get all that? I listened to that over his... Tim Snyder is an excellent historian who lectures at Yale and specializes in Middle Eastern European history. So I enjoy it very much, okay, especially having lived in Romania and with the Ukrainian war and all of that. History is the interpretation of records of continuity and discontinuity within a measurable period of time and place. I'm not going to bother writing it up. I will hand you the paper later. It's on there. All right? Okay? And what I'm going to say is this, especially that concept of continuity and discontinuity. There are forces that want to keep things the same. And then there are contextual influences that come and break those things that are the same, those way we've always done. Those are always under pressure. All right? And so that's where wars and conflict and all this stuff come in, because things are changing, and then other people wanted to keep it the same. All right? And then there are records of these things, and how do we interpret those records? That's what we talk about when we're talking about history. All right? So it's a beautiful, convoluted definition, but I find it meaningful. All right, the importance of American history. Again, I'm going to hand this to you, but this is my quote now. And actually, I played with that other one. That's Tim Snyder through my filter. They're not his direct words. The importance of American history is, not only have we been impacted by American history, we are in subtle yet profound ways part of the American story. All right? This is us. This is our story, whether we like it or not. If you are in this classroom, you are part of the American story. There are a lot of other people who are part of the American story who are not in this classroom, but still. That's us. That's you. Okay, that's our definitions. Let's go on to another question. What are some important chronological events in American history? And this, of course, presupposes that chronology is important. Chronology is, of course, time, and the word, the thing that, a word to indicate what happened in time. So let's talk about chronology just a little bit. This is the part that people do not like to, students often get so tired of having to memorize dates and that kind of thing, and it's on the test, all right? But this is where we go. So I have a list, and I don't want to show it to you yet, but I will show it to you. Let's have a couple things. Let's start earlier and go later, all right? So what would you, where would you begin a chronology of America? Okay, we're going to go very broad. So if you're not fast enough, I'm going to say something. Okay. So, I begin with before Columbus. Who was here before Columbus came? And the Vikings or whoever, I'm not talking about Europeans. I'm talking about the Native American societies that were all over North and South America. That's an important part of American history. And so, I have down pre- and post-Columbian Native American societies. Okay, now that tells you what's the next big step in American chronology. It is...
Columbus,
and more specifically, the coming of the Europeans. What is what term is, has been given to that event in history? Does anybody know very quickly? Right, the Columbian Exchange. Okay, the Columbian Exchange is the fact that Europeans, specifically Europeans, brought things to America, and America gave things back. All right, not just silver and gold, and that impacted world history in an amazing and deep and profound way. One thing. How many of you like to eat at Thai, Indian, or Korean restaurants? Have you had those? When I think of an Indian meal, I'm talking about East Indian, of course. I was at an Indian restaurant, and it was like, okay, so what level of hot, of heat do you want in this thing? Low, medium, or high? And I'm like, well, I kind of like it hot, but I'm not real hot. I usually go with medium. Like, when these are Indian cooks over here, and so like you'd better just go low. Okay, I'll try the low. Yeah, it wasn't too spicy, but it was quite present. All right. Now, what does that have to do with the Columbian Exchange?
Peppers come from the America.
All spicy foods did not exist before the Columbian Exchange, except in the American societies. All spicy food is based on the pepper, which comes from Mexico. Okay, so that's any other Native American foods that have gone over the world? Quick
question.
Tomatoes.
Potatoes
and
corn.
There you go. Corn, tomatoes, potatoes, peppers, and corns. All right, those have impacted eating habits all over the world, all right? And they are from the Columbian Exchange. We can't sit there. What's another quick step after that? Okay, I have the coming of the Puritans and the Pilgrims and the fact that there was a religious dimension initiated into American/European history that has been very profound in our national identity. After that, who is the next great migration movement after the initial European Pilgrim Puritan wave? Quickly, you all know the answer.
Quakers?
No.
Slaves?
Africans. More Africans migrated to North and South America than Europeans, by far. This is part of the tragedy. The huge majority of them died. Okay? Why are there more people of European descent than African descent? Because they died. And not just on the crossing, but after they got here. Now, not so much in what is now the United States. Okay, how many of Africans of the all were brought to the United States? Different percentages, you want to guess? Okay, it's usually suggested between 4 and 7%. All right, of anywhere between 12 and maybe 25 million Africans. All right, again, this is much more than the Europeans that came. All right, the life expectancy of an African in Belize was 7 years. So that's after, if they survive the journey, they're expected to survive around 7 years. All right, and they are simply worked to death. It's a tragedy, and it's part of the American story. All right, okay. We think of Africans, we think of a very important war, there yet. Revolutionary War. Okay, this is before. So people like to talk about the United States and slavery. Well, actually, it wasn't even the United States, quite technically. It was a European problem. But we have inherited that problem. Okay? And many of us will have European descent. Probably all of us in some way. When I say European descent, of course, I mean the other way. But anyhow, let's keep going. Okay. Thinking of a Revolutionary War, I think Western expansion. I'm going to have to just keep going here. Then I have the American Civil War. Does anybody know what is profoundly important about the American Civil War? We're talking on an international scale here.
One is the advancement of weaponry.
Yes. That plays into the thing I was going to say, but it's working together, and that is, it is not isolated. It's built on Napoleon, and help me out with the adjective with Napoleon.
Napoleonic?
Napoleonic, thank you! The Napoleonic Wars, which were, again, incredibly, had an incredibly profound, I shouldn't be using so many adverbs, impact on world history and on Anabaptist/Mennonite history, very much so. All right, that then was brought into the U.S. concept of war in the Civil War, and it is the world's first actual total war, where all resources are directed toward one aim, and that is the war. All right, let's get this thing over with. And then involved with that intense focus comes an incredibly rapid advance in military technology, which of course bleeds out in all kinds of productive things over society afterwards. We're still being impacted by technological improvements in World War II. All right, but of course the first thing that it's for is the killing of people and the destroying of the objects. All right, how much more Antichrist can you get than that? Okay, we've got to keep going. There's the Spanish-American War, which is the extension of American power. How many of you are familiar with Mark Twain's War Prayer? Okay, not as many as I assumed. I should have printed it, and I don't have it, so write that in your notes. The War Prayer by Mark Twain. You want to read that, okay? This is an American thinker who has a gift of biting satire and making the truth evident in very evident and subtle ways, all right? The funny thing is that at the very end of the prayer, the preacher, the angel that is more or less denouncing this aspect of the Spanish War is this continuation of the Spanish War was simply dismissed. His message was dismissed because nobody could understand him. Meanwhile, nobody would print Mark Twain's War Prayer. And it was still, it's never really been in print until very recently when it's included in his complete works, and then Peaceniks found it and really threw it out. But I will say this, the poem was written in contrast to the American-Filipino War, which is not normally taught. Very few people know about the American-Filipino War, which is a continuation of the Spanish-American War. America sort of inherited the Philippines, because that was under Spanish domain, and they kicked the Spanish out, right? Those corrupted imperialists. And then they're going to bring freedom to the Filipinos. And they said, but not right away. You're not ready for it. William Taft, the president, said, I mean, sure, it will be at least a century, and maybe even longer than that, before the Filipinos will be ready to self-govern. The Filipinos, like the American colonists, had other opinions. And they went and they fought over it, and American soldiers actually died, just not very many of them. They had better equipment and all of that, and they could shoot a lot more people than what they suffered themselves. But it was not a real popular thing, and of course, Americans don't have too much tolerance for things that make them uncomfortable and for which they do not see any point behind. They have a lot of tolerance if they see a point behind it, but not much tolerance if they don't see a point behind it, okay? And the war was abandoned. But more Filipinos died in that war than Americans died in World War I, right? You get that? That's a profound thing. The Filipinos pressed that. Same thing happened in Vietnam. People often talk about the American soldiers, how They just didn't, they couldn't fight in Vietnam. Actually, the American soldiers fought very well in Vietnam. They were extremely effective. They were simply not willing to pay the cost that the Vietnamese were. Approximately 25 Vietnamese soldiers died for every one American. All right, so it was a very high cost for the Vietnamese, and eventually the Americans said, no, enough of this. Okay, that's a whole other subject. Spanish-American War, we have, of course, the World Wars, and what came between the World Wars?
Great Depression.
The Great Depression. Again, very influential stuff. What do you think after World War II? What would you clarify after that? What's an important thing in the chronology of what we're looking at?
Cold War.
Cold War. Something else. When I think of the 60s and 70s, and 80s, I actually have something else before the Cold Hot War, but it's in that time. You should be aware of it because it's happening again now.
Space race.
Oh, good. Even right over that time, after, before. All right.
The hippie movement.
Good. Bigger. Racial tension. Racial tension over segregation and actually racial, race-based riots and so on like that. Okay. I see that we're taking way too much time, but I will say this yet. We have lived through a couple huge revolutions. The revolution that was just kind of tapering off as I was growing up was the transportation revolution. All right? A friend and neighbor of ours who lived where we did had never been east of the Mississippi River. I don't think he was very far west of it either. Okay, so he lived there. He remembered when the four-lane road that was going through our area was a gravel road. All right? We had, during that that time, this was Philip Hosiner, by the way, if you remember him. Yes. The way that people could get around on vehicles and on planes and so on like that just exploded. That's the transportation revolution. What have you lived through?
Corona. You?
Sorry?
Corona.
Oh, good. This is going to actually mark fairly low on the scale of international events. All right. The digital, which is often called?
Communication.
Information age. All right, so you can tie all those others into it. But information age, when information becomes available in a heartbeat. I mean, it's already normal for you guys. It's even getting normal for me, and I'm a Luddite. I don't like it, but I'm dragged into it, okay? Anyway, that's what you've been living through. Then there's the problem with entertainment and narcotics. Entitlement, the war on drugs, and of course 9/11, the axes of evil, and war on terrorism. Okay, I'm almost ready to give you my handout here. I want to go to another question. What is a world view? I should look at, yeah. What is a world view and why is it important? Maybe it's not important. Okay, who can tell me why? This is what I really want to stress. What do you think about when you think about a worldview? Are you raising your hand?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah.
It's a system that we interpret the world through.
Yes. Okay. Anybody else want to add that to that? It sounds kind of dry and boring and not really that important there, Darren. Sorry. All right. Let me look at mine. I'll go over what I say and then I'm going to hand these out. So what is a worldview? I have a lens through which we view and evaluate what is taking and what has taken place within our sphere of knowledge and or reality. All right? Now that sounds kind of dry and weird, but it's like he said system. I use the word lens because it colors everything and it's how we interpret what has happened and what is happening, and how we then respond to that whole thing. Now, why is it important?
Well, perspective.
Okay, so let's start with you.
Perspective is everything.
Okay, perspective is everything. Yeah, I've said something similar, so don't take this too wrong. But if your child gets killed, that's just a death. So what's your perspective on it? Well, it does actually make a difference, doesn't it? But real things do actually happen, all right? And regardless of how you perceive it, that reality is there. And so I'm just widening the parameters a little bit. What were you going to say?
Essentially, But our perspective, you derailed me with your thought, but our perspective, it determines in which direction we head.
Good. From that,
yes.
From that actual naked reality, how do we go with that? All right. Don't let it make you bitter, but make you... Don't we love those pious platitudes? All right, I have another one that I want to throw in there. Why do I think a worldview is so important? Is because it is normally invisible. People don't think about it. People don't even realize they have a worldview. And you do have a worldview. All right? It's like this. What is impacting the way you view things is of profound importance in your life, and it's even more profound if you don't even know that it's impacting the way you think. Does that make sense? Right? It's a little bit like if you only speak English, and that's the only way you can talk, it's like there's not even an understanding of what other knowledge, of what other language, of the other languages out there. And someone comes and speaks Romanian, Spanish, Russian, whatever, to you, how much do you understand? Well, absolutely nothing, unless you can get a little bit from their body language or actually find out you know a few words, okay, which most of us do. Okay, I'm going to pass these out. Pass them. Actually, I'll just start it from there. I'll give a couple clear, and there's going to be some left over. I'm sure. I don't know how helpful or how important this thing is. I did put a lot of care into it, and now you can just follow along with me. You will see what I put down for a chronology. I thought maybe some of you would have more to say on some of that, but of course, our time is so limited, isn't it? So here we go. If you jump over the definitions and chronology, which are there, which we discussed, we have now see history and worldview. It is impossible not to tell or hear a story from a certain way and from a certain perspective. By the way, there are some real typos in here. When I type, I just go like crazy and just mangle those words. And I don't get them in the right order or not. Then, of course, I depend on spell check and reading over it and whatever. And here I notice there's one I missed. I don't know if it's something I threw in there later. So please don't laugh at me too hard. It's so hurtful to me. It is impossible to be divorced or separated from our history, and it is thus perilous to ignore it. We could talk about all these things. Therefore, the telling and hearing of the American history will simultaneously, I love this, reflect and impact, that is, create or strengthen a particular perspective and worldview, often subliminally. Subliminally means below your conscious level, all right? It's just there, and we are all there. We are impacted subliminally. Subliminal influence is not bad. It's just important. It's influential. Okay. Now, what creates and what reflects our worldview? It is, I owe this to Melvin Lehman. And again, this is running through my filter now, so they're not necessarily his words, but it was like I was grappling with this very thing, and then he came along and gave something, and it's like, yes, that's it. All right, so here we go. The stories we tell and the heroes we pursue, the history we remember, all play a subtle yet profound role in creating a perspective of our vocation. What is vocation?
Job.
Technically calling. So I'm right now, my job is construction. That's not really my vocation, okay? So it should be maybe, but I can't quite get there. So our calling, and then we have, it's sort of our mission and sort of our goals. They're all interrelated with each other. So what is our vocation? What is our mission? What are our goals from a Christian perspective, including not only what we do, but also who we in fact are? All right, there's a lot to unpack there. What I want to say is this. It's not only the stories we tell, it's also how we tell them. And it is especially the stories we tell when we're on a roll that have not been pre-scripted or thought about. They're just coming off the cuff. I'll give you one very quickly. I was with some men, and they're my friends and brethren and all of that, so I'm not wanting to be too critical. Okay, but they know I'm a little bit how I am, and they love me, and I appreciate that. And they're very respectful. But this comment was made. In Dawson Creek recently, there was a man who is allegedly a child molester or stalker or something like that. Something ugly. There's nothing that cranks in my heart worse than pedophilia, and there are reasons for that. So, ugly. All right, a bunch of locals caught him, and I don't know if it was at a school or if it was just at his place. They beat him up and smashed his car and did all kinds of stuff, all right? And then departed the scene, and he went to the hospital, I'm assuming. Okay, and they were saying, man, that's what we need more of. let this thing grow. And I'm like, no, that's not my perspective. All right, and I will tell you why. It's from a historical kind. What they're telling me is that they're seeing this as something good because society is correcting itself. My point is every vigilante society, if it has endured, has organized, and has become something evil. Everyone that I know of, and I know of a number of them, all right, they've all become something that they did not intend to become, and it's how they did it. Now, what I would have respected deeply in that case are people doing, I would have respected it, I would not have advocated for it. If they would have done it and then stayed there to take the legal punishment for having done it. Like there are, for example, women who have protested sex tourism in the Far East who have gone and smashed windows of the travel agency that are doing this thing, and then they've waited to be arrested for it, and they're going to tell their story in court. And of course, well, we don't really want you to tell your story. But they take the consequence, a form of activism that takes the consequence because you're willing to pay it, all right? That at least has my grudging respect, even if I don't necessarily advocate it. Okay, all right. The stories we tell, the things we pursue, they're saying something about how we perceive the world, all right? Okay, now, an endeavor to be aware of subliminal tendencies and perspectives and to engage with our pluriform histories honestly. What do I mean by pluriform? All right, a form is a certain way that we kind of encapsulate reality. We think this is what it looks like. This is what America looks like. This is what a good church looks like. This is what, these are forms, all right? Well, depending on who you are, those look different, all right? So pluri means many different forms, all right? So there are many different ways of looking at the United States. I love Abeka and the way they colorfully present facts and give things, just present their stuff. But I remember being very offended in their American history thing, and I don't even like their world history because I think it's way too American-centric. But in this case, in their American one, they said the thing that America was different from Europe because, you know, the only limitation that you had was your own sense of responsibility. You could get ahead if you wanted to. I'm like, that really depends on who you were. All right? Like, have you heard of African slavery? Like, it's not the whole story, but it is part of the story. And furthermore, nothing is completely in our power. I know that's part of the American myth. You can change it. No, there are things you cannot change. All right? But we can work on our perspective and, of course, asking the Lord to help us. And he has not promised to change everything, by the way. This is my Christian worldview coming in. He has promised to walk with us. All right? There is a huge difference in that perspective. Okay. Now, to engage with our pluriform histories honestly, intentionally, there's your triphone, and compassionately via a Christocentric / Anabaptist worldview can help equip us too. Now, I do put Anabaptist in there, and I actually am a little bit weary of the Anabaptist term, even though I self-profess to be an Anabaptist, and that is this. Anabaptism at its best points to Christ, not to itself. Now, I believe that so strongly that I'm willing to be called an Anabaptist. But the whole point of it is not to become to ourselves. It can become idolatrous, and in fact has in time. So get off to Christ. That's what we want. Okay, so what can it do as we read American history, as we talk about this chronology? It helps us to live kingdom lives within whatever geopolitical environment we find ourselves. It helps us to live abundantly and contentedly in whatever nation. And I want to say this. When I say contentedly, I mean we look for the good things. And we're willing to address the bad. All right? Redemptively address the bad. That means, redemptively means being honest with it, But, like, that's not the end of the story. Everything is bad, you know. Americans had slaves, all bad. Okay? No, it's not quite that simple, but it is an important part that needs to be addressed. And if we fight it and all, we don't even want to talk about it, okay, well, then we're saying something else. It helps us to live in service and mission, community, and personal integrity. It helps us to live in communal and personal worship and discipleship. It helps us to live in hope. I have a slash tomorrow comes. Anybody want to guess where that comes from? It's not an American thing. Well, it is an American production, but it's a French story. Yeah, that should give it kind of... Are you familiar with the musical Les Miserables? Okay. The very end of it, it has that finale of a song it keeps repeating, and the last words are, when tomorrow comes, when we will lay aside the sword and take up the plow, and we will live in hope and beauty and joy and all this stuff. I just think it's actually a very wonderful thing. With all this in mind, how do we or should we tell the American story and stories? Okay, I can't go out talk about all this, but I had four issues of which I added a fifth. What are current issues, and these address American weaknesses and strengths? Let me just ask this. What are some American weaknesses? What do you think? This should be addressed in a talk about American history. So we've talked about some.
Self-centered.
Self-centeredness. Quickly. We're so slow. Okay, there's our second bell. Okay, I guess we'll just end with the fact that we're self-centered. Okay, I'll say this. You can go if you want. But a sense of entitlement, a sense that things kind of revolve around us. I will say this very nicely to my evangelical friends and Mennonite friends who love prophecy. Have you noticed how many eschatological schemes in America have America in the center? All right? All these prophecies in Revelation were about America and Americans, American responses to the Great Bear of the East and that kind of thing. It's just it's a warning bell. You know, St. John was not only thinking about the United States of America when he wrote Revelation. Okay? Just keep that in mind. Entitlement, a sense of arrogance and aggressiveness. Now, I want to get that aggressiveness. That's actually a good thing if it is impelled by positive feelings and that kind of thing. It's still on. All right. What are some good things about America?
Opportunities,
okay? You actually notice them if you're somewhere else. Anything else?
I think they're one of the most altruistic countries.
Yeah, good. Altruistic. That means a giving, okay? Generous. Catches you by surprise. The state is not the most altruistic, but the people are much more than what the state would suggest, okay? All right. I see, again, resilience, hope, and the fact that one of our greatest current issues is migration. Is the fact that people want to come to America. All right. Pearl told me she would like to talk about why do we as Mennonites love law enforcement and still believe in non-resistance. That's a hot issue. One thing that I would stress with that, in your love for law enforcement, love law-abidingness. All right? It's actually much law enforcement. Law-abidingness is much more than simply a law enforcement that comes from the top and makes everybody obey. When that's the only thing that's doing it, it's tyranny. All right? We don't like tyranny. I'm just going to say that. I'm an American. I do not like tyranny. Okay. God bless you all.